You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 137. Maybe it's your first time listening to the show, or maybe you've listened to all 137 episodes. That's kind of like, that's probably 137 hours of listening. That's huge. Or maybe you've just listened to one or two, but if you'd like to go back through them and listen to more, you can find the show on iTunes. Just go to iTunes and search for The Dream Show. Or you can find and download and listen to all the shows on my blog at www.janetheresa.com, or you can find your way there from my website at www.dream.net.au. If you listen to the last episode, you'll remember that Patty was my guest. One of the formats for The Dream Show is to have a guest on the show who brings a dream, and we have a chat about the dream. We discover what it means and relate it to the dreamer's life. And last episode, episode 136, Patty was my guest. I've just had a little email from Patty that she's asked me to share. She just said, "I just wanted you to know that since the bike dream you helped me interpret, I've picked my dissertation back up with much more determination and confidence. I think going through that dream with you was extremely transformative. I've shared our conversation with many friends who absolutely loved the interview and your accent and the charming way you say my name." Thanks, Patty. Actually, I don't know any other way to say Patty because that's just my accent. But charming, I'm happy with charming rather than weird accent. It was, of course, lovely to have Paddy on the show, and it's lovely to have all the guests that we have on the show. And it's great to hear back along those lines, which is usually the case, that talking about a dream and exploring it further and you know, really going quite deep is an extremely transformative experience. It feels transformative at the time, but you really got to wait for a few weeks to pass to really notice how deeply it can change your perspective on life and the decisions you make and the way you walk through life after that. But it's lovely to hear it, and it's lovely to share that with you. Of course, if you'd like to have that experience yourself, which is nowhere near as deep as doing it confidentially and privately one-on-one, because we are mindful that we have quite a lot of people listening in to this show when we have a guest on the show. But if you'd like to have that experience, just email me. You'll find my contact details on either my website or my blog, and email me. And if you'd like to contribute to the show by bringing a guest along, and of course, what we do for that is phone or Skype you and record our conversation. So anyway, that was episode 136, and today in episode 137, we haven't got a guest on the show. I'm bringing you some maybe slightly dark, but hopefully funny takes on nightmares and things that go bump in the night. And these are intended not only to entertain but inform. So I hope you'll learn lots about dreams and dream interpretation and my take on it. And we're starting with A Nightmare on Elm Street. Now, this was a blog that I wrote in February this year, A Nightmare on Elm Street. And you know, even if you've read the blog, sometimes it's different when you hear the articles. "What does the nightmare in A Nightmare on Elm Street mean?" asked Steve and Abby, presenters of the Power Pack Breakfast Show, where I interpret callers' dreams. I'm a movie lover, but horror is not my genre, and it took a few arm twists before I agreed to download it so I could answer the question. "Don't watch it alone," Abby warned. I wouldn't. So I watched it with my husband, Michael, and son, Ewan, and right from the start we giggled with relief. 31 years on, the movie was interestingly benign from a horror point of view. Maybe it was the acting style. Maybe it's the sophistication of today's persuasive movie techniques. Or maybe I've just listened to so many nightmares during my 20-plus years as a dream analyst that it didn't engage my horror buttons. In fact, our first exciting moment came when Ewan said, "Is that Johnny Depp?" And we realised we were watching Johnny Depp in his first major movie role, age 21, but looking about 14. As Nancy's boyfriend in the movie, he came to a very sticky end. Or did he? How much of the movie is about a dream? When Nancy wakes from a nightmare, is she really awake? Or has she slipped into a dream within a dream? Is she awake at the beginning of the movie? Is she awake when she goes back to school the morning after the first death? Is she awake when she visits the sleep laboratory? If you've seen the movie, how did you feel in the penultimate scene where she steps into the dazzling bright morning light and walks towards the car? Was she awake then? Written and directed by Wes Craven, A Nightmare on Elm Street is a slasher movie, slasher being a horror subgenre. I'm glad I didn't know that going in. Craven named the villain, Freddy Krueger, after Fred Krueger, the boy who bullied him during his adolescent years. So it's interesting that Nancy and her friends are all adolescents who live in fear of Krueger and what he'll do to them. The movie is celebrated as one of the first to intelligently explore the boundaries between illusion and reality, and between dreaming and waking life, by manipulating and confusing the audience. Now here's a spoiler alert. Craven's original ending was for Nancy to kill Krueger by ceasing to give him her energy and time, and then to wake up and realise it had all been one long nightmare. But the studio, New Line Cinema, asked for a twist ending. Both endings were filmed, and the movie was released with the twist ending, where the whole plot is a dream within a dream within a dream with no awakening. Craven pulled out of the proposed A Nightmare on Elm Street sequel over the twist ending. In the movie, Nancy and her friends all dream the same dream. Two of the friends die during their sleep, slashed to pieces by their nightmare ghoul, Freddy Krueger. Nancy and her boyfriend realise the same fate awaits them, so they try to stay awake for days and days. This idea was inspired by several newspaper articles Craven had seen about Khmer refugees fleeing the Cambodian Khmer Rouge genocides, who were so frightened by their nightmares that they tried to stay awake. Several died in their sleep when exhaustion prevailed. Craven was also inspired by the 1970s song Dreamweaver by Gary Wright, which essentially explored our differing perceptions of the world, our illusions about reality, the way we each dream up our worlds and our experiences. So on one level, the film explores illusion and reality, while on another, it runs past some sleep theories. Nancy is taken to a sleep laboratory where we learn a little about REM sleep and dreaming, only to realise, of course, that even this episode is a dream. We learn about how staying awake for days is fatally detrimental. Severe sleep deprivation kills. And we learn about false awakenings, the dream in which you dream that you wake up, but you continue in the dream. Let's get back to the original question. What does the nightmare in A Nightmare on Elm Street mean? In the movie, Freddy Krueger was a real-life child murderer who escaped jail due to a paperwork error. The parents killed him to keep the neighbourhood safe, but his ghost returned to take revenge on their children by killing them in their sleep. It's helpful to look at everyone and everything in a dream as reflecting something about the dreamer's conscious and unconscious feelings and beliefs. Freddy Krueger represents danger and risk, and the more we try to sanitize life and play safe, the more these energies are called into being. In Craven's original ending, Nancy wakes from her dream once she confronts Krueger, then withdraws her attention and energy from him. In life, when we face our fears, understand them, deal with them, then withdraw our focus and energy from them, they disappear. In this context, the nightmare is about facing, or not facing, fears about danger, risk, and safety. The other strong thread in the movie is adolescent promiscuity. Remember, this is the early 80s, and loss of innocence. In The Nightmare, teenage promiscuity leads to slashing, mutilation, destruction, and death. No matter how much parents try to protect their adolescent children, the teenagers naturally explore their sexuality, and the results, loss of innocence, guilt, emotional trauma, an end to childhood, are reflected in such nightmares. In Craven's original script, Kruger was a child molester, not a child murderer, which is telling. As a dream analyst, I notice how common it is for young teenagers to experience violent dreams as they encounter the conflicts of leaving childhood behind and growing into independence. Finally, for Craven, perhaps the movie is an unconscious working of the bullying he experienced as an adolescent. Bullying continues to cause pain well beyond school years. It can haunt an individual for a lifetime unless it's confronted and addressed. Maybe Craven did just that via Nancy. Have you seen the movie? What did you make of it? So it was kind of an easy decision after deciding to bring you A Nightmare on Elm Street to also bring you Cheese, Alcohol, Movies and Dreams, which I wrote in May 2012. Cheese, Alcohol, Movies and Dreams. Does the movie you watched last night, the cheese you ate for dinner, or the whiskey you knocked back all evening affect your dreams? Might a hot night, a thunderstorm, a full bladder, a rattling window, a screeching mosquito, or a headache explain away a weird dream? Yes, and then again no. Let's start with a movie. If a movie really affects you, your dreaming mind will often process the parts that resonated with your emotions, personal issues, beliefs, and life experiences. Your dream may or may not use some of the symbols from the movie, but whatever the dream, do not dismiss it as caused by the movie. Think of the movie as having prompted issues that need your deeper attention. How about that cheese or alcohol? The idea that cheese causes bad dreams is an old wives' tale, though body sensations such as indigestion, thirst, cold, a full bladder, a blocked nose, and numbness can get picked up by your brain and woven into the storyline of a dream. So your indigestion might turn up in a dream as a python coiling around your waist, the thirst as a shift in scene to a desert, the cold air as a passing ghost, or the numbness as a lost limb. But these will vary from person to person and from dream to dream. Again, the important thing is not to dismiss your dream as caused by the cheese, cold or thirst, but to ask why your dream has chosen a certain symbol or way of processing the sensation. That symbol is meaningful, as is your dream. It tells you about how your mind works, and that's the object and power of dream interpretation. The rattling window might become the sound of a roulette game in one person's dream, a cattle train speeding by in another person's dream, and a trash bin being emptied in someone else's dream. How the dreaming mind interprets the intrusion and how it goes on to incorporate it into the dream storyline delivers meaningful insight about the dreamer. So never dismiss any dream. Oh, about the alcohol. Binge drinking can knock out dreams for a few hours. But if you sleep long enough, you'll experience more intense dreams towards morning. It's as if the dreaming mind has to squeeze all the dreams in at the end of the night once the worst of the alcohol is out of your system. These intense dreams are REM rebound dreams. REM refers to rapid eye movement sleep phase, where we do most of our dreaming. Too much alcohol blocks REM in the early hours, so come morning, it's rebound time. And yes, those dreams are meaningful, so don't dismiss them. And obviously I had to do things that go bump in the night too, didn't I? That jumped out of me. February 2012, things that go bump in the night. Ever woken to eerie sounds in the night? Or a feeling of your skin being touched when you're sleeping alone? Or been scared out of your wits when you've opened your eyes to actually see ghosts or strange things going on in your bedroom? As utterly convincing and frightening as these sensations are, it's important to take a deep breath and know that what you're hearing, feeling, and seeing is not real. Neither are you going insane. What you're doing is dreaming while partly awake, so that both your dreaming and waking worlds overlap. You could say you're experiencing the twilight zone, not a scary spirit world, but a brain zone where the night of dreams mixes with the light of day in a hazy, confused half-light. This is how it happens. When you wake up to visions in your bedroom, you are experiencing a phenomenon known as hypnopompic hallucination. When you open your eyes while you are dreaming, your eyes transmit a picture of your bedroom to your brain, and this is then superimposed onto your dream images. Because your eyes are open, your brain decides the mix of images is a real event situated in your bedroom. So you see the ghost or dream scene in your room. The same applies to other sensations such as sound and touch. If you start to wake up while you're still dreaming of a wolf howling or a tiger nuzzling your skin, your brain will superimpose the fading howls or the warmth of the tiger's breathy lick onto your bedroom scene. You will be absolutely convinced that a wolf is outside your door, or that a tiger is under your bed, as your ears will still be ringing and your skin still tingling. The sensations feel real, but they are dream sensations dissolving away as your brain becomes fully awake. The memories of those sensations may haunt you, but they were dreams. Have you ever got into bed and then felt the covers lift, as if an invisible stranger or spirit had just climbed in with you? The explanation for this sensation is the same, except that your dreaming mind has switched on while you're still half awake. This common experience usually happens when you're not expressing your whole self, holding back too much on the real you, the true enormity of your power. Your dream is about to introduce you to your lost spirit, and you perceive this lost, detached, abandoned shadow as a separate being as your brain begins to switch into dreaming mode. So when these kinds of spooky events happen to you, relax in the safety of this knowledge and be amazed at the power of the mind to believe what it sees and feels. Then simply record your awesome twilight zone experience and interpret it as the dream it really is. So I thought we'd probably better end on something just a little bit uplifted, although I'm kind of hoping that you've been smiling through that. But let's just make sure that it's really, really positive before I say goodbye for this episode. And so I thought this one, how to change the world through your dreams. How to change the world through your dreams. I wrote this in September 2012. When you're dreaming, you think the dream is for real, don't you? When you wake up, you're surprised to find that your dream didn't happen. When you're awake, you know that you also experience a dream reality. But when you're asleep, unless you're lucid dreaming, you don't know that you also experience a waking reality. The dream is it, your total reality, while you're in it. Does this thought ever make you question your waking reality? It should. How real is waking life? If dreaming life while you're in it also seems real. Might you one day wake up from waking life and discover it too was a kind of dream? Your experience of waking life is a result of how you see it, both how you choose to see life and how your personal unconscious mind sees it. We all look at life from our own personal perspectives. We all experience the same world from different angles. We all process and interpret the world we live in according to our beliefs, attitudes, and previous experiences. So, how real is the waking world you experience? Is it a kind of dream? You decide. It's definitely a kind of illusion, isn't it? It's your illusion, and you can change it at any point by changing the way you see it. Dream interpretation helps you to understand and see through your own illusions. In this way, dream interpretation helps you to change your waking world. The tip here is that the best way to change the world is to start with your dreams. As you get to understand yourself deeply, you start to see how the world can become a better place and how you can play your part in its transformation. Begin with learning how to interpret your dreams. And you know, that's a lot of the idea that we have behind doing the Dream Show, this 4-weekly podcast, and making it free on iTunes and free on my blog at janetheresa.com. It's that idea of helping you and anybody that cares to listen with some free and basic tools and resources so that you can learn how to interpret your own dreams. And those of you that have been listening to the show for a long time, as well as accessing the other resources and reading all the articles on my blog and perhaps reading my books, my ebooks, who knows, all of these add to your huge repertoire of tools and abilities and resources so that you can begin to understand your dreams, because it is quite a complicated process. So if you're enjoying this, and of course you get to have so much practice, don't you? I mean, if you could remember all your dreams, you'd be remembering 4 or 5 dreams a night for an 8-hour sleep. Of course, we don't usually remember them all, but probably if you're interested in dreams, you're remembering at least 3 or 4 major dreams a week. So if your life's really busy, pick one. Just pick one dream. Either pick the one that you're the most curious about, or pick the one that you really, 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 really don't want to look at. Either of those will be really good starting points for interpreting your dreams. And I know that of all the people listening in, there are some of you listening to this or thinking about interpreting dreams the very first time, maybe brought here because a friend has said you should listen to this show, or maybe brought here because you've had a frightening or interesting dream and this is all step one for you and all new. And I know there are many, many others listening here who range in their abilities to understand dreams. There are many professional analysts and psychologists and psychotherapists listening as well. I know, because you all write me beautiful emails and we have such lovely discussions. So spread the word to everyone. Everyone dreams. This resource is free. I hope you like it. Because of or despite my strange accent, which is something that I'm probably not really willing to change. It's been here for a long time with me. It's part of me. And if you'd like to know more about dreams, please visit my website at dream.net.au or my blog at janetheresa.com. That's Teresa without an H. Or, of course, find me on Facebook. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. And our next episode, episode 138, will be due out on the 3rd of May. Have a wonderful 4 weeks. Do share and do contact me if you'd love to be a guest on The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one in the Lifestyle Pod Network section of iTunes.